This week's mailbag comes to us from Stephanie via email. Hello. I have to say that I'm a huge fan of Organized 365 and the Sunday Basket. I've been listening to the podcast for over 2 years, but I have been using a Sunday Basket faithfully for a year now, and it has been life-changing. As a busy mom of 4 kids, a former business executive turned entrepreneur, and a mom to a child with health issues, the Sunday Basket has been my lifesaver. If you ever have a need in the future to interview a fellow entrepreneur who has implemented the Sunday Basket at home and the Friday Workbox, I would be thrilled to give my experience in how your methodology has literally changed my life. I couldn't be more thankful for your wisdom. It has been life-changing for me, and I know it's always interesting to hear how another person has been changed by your teaching. Let's just say I am a huge fan. Thank you for all you do, Lisa and Team Organize 365. Do you have an Organize 365 success story? We would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at lisa@organize365.com and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organize 365.
Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Oh my goodness, Eve, thank you so much for coming on the Organize 365 podcast.
I'm so happy to be here with you and to be with a fellow Putnam author. I'm so excited.
So I think you're going to be hearing a lot more from Eve and I together during our pre-interview chat. We just are so synergistically aligned. It is amazing. I had so much fun watching your book launch and you becoming a New York Times bestselling author twice, 2 weeks in a row. Congratulations. That is amazing.
Thank you.
Oh my goodness. And you are like on a nonstop, like every time I look on Instagram, you're in another city, you're being interviewed by somebody. Like, are you sleeping at all?
I'm not, but the good news is that, you know, I call Fair Play, it's a rainbow story. It sort of started off as my love letter to women, but it's become my love letter to men at the other end of the rainbow. So I will say that the man that I talk about in the beginning of Fair Play, where, you know, I was expected to be the fulfiller of his smoothie needs, yeah, is now holding all the cards in my domestic household for my family. So it's been a lot easier to be living with someone like that when I've been on the road, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I think so true. Like, I love that you bring out men right away, because we as women are kind of trying to figure out where are we now in society, and yes, we can do, be, and have anything we want. What do we want? And I think the same question should be asked of men. Like, they could do, be, and have everything they want. What do they want? Correct. So, yeah, I do think it is a not an either-or proposition.
Correct. It's definitely not an either-or. And I think what I've found, right, is that for women to step into their full power in the world, which sometimes doesn't happen in midlife, which is where I was when I wrote this book, sobbing on the side of the road 7 years ago, in my mid-30s, now I'm 42. But for women to step into their full power in the world, whatever that means, paid or not paid, we have to invite men to step into their full power in the home. And it starts with systems, which is why you and I are so synergistically aligned, because systems work, whether it's organizing systems or full home systems like Fair Play. They work. And so I think we will be doing more things together.
Yeah. So I'm talking about the book Fair Play. I don't think I said that. I think I jumped right in. I'm so excited. So this is Eve Rodsky's book, Fair Play. It's called A Game-Changing Solution for When You Have Too Much to Do and More Life to Live. So obviously, we're talking on the Organize 365 podcast right now. And you, as the Organize 365 listener, know if you're in the 100-day program, at the beginning of the planner, I give you literally 84 different roles you might be playing in the house. And unlike Eve, I'm like telling you which ones to defer, which ones you're going to get done, which ones you're going to outsource. But I put all the onus on the woman, because I have put all the onus on myself. And I often quote the Pew Research Institute that says it takes, you know, 38 hours a week or 26 hours, some ridiculous amount of hours a week without children to keep your household running. And that skews more women than men. But Eve has figured out how we level the playing field. And that's what the Fair Play book does. So Eve, do you want to just give like you've done so many interviews. I'm sure you have this down to a succinct presentation. Tell everybody what the book is about and how it helps them.
Well, thank you. I like to say this is a book I was born to write because I'm a product of a single mom household where nothing was organized. And so what that meant was that we would get eviction notices, slipped under the door, and I'd wait up late for my mom. And I started to notice a difference in bills between regular bills and late bills with the big sort of red late notices on them. And those I would put in a pile for my mother. And so I saw what it looked like for a woman to do it all. Mm-hmm. And I vowed that was not going to happen to me, that I would have an equal partner in life. And I married that equal partner, Seth. And really it really was equal. I mean, we were supporting each other in our careers. We took turns doing the dishes. We took turns organizing, actually. He would do mail one week. I would do mail next week, bill paying, taking turns making dinner. I say like cut to two kids later where it sort of all falls apart over a text he sends me that Seth sent me. And that text just said, "I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries." And so, you know, you can picture the scene. I was just had my second son, Ben. My older son was 3 years old. You know, he was in a toddler transition program. I get this text. I'm in my car. I have a breast pump and a diaper bag on the passenger seat of my car. I have gifts to return for a new baby because it was all on me back then, but that's what you just said, in the back seat. Gifts for a new baby to return. I'm racing to go to get my older son from his toddler transition preschool program, which in America, because we value working parents, you know, lasts about like 5 minutes. And so I just pull over, I start crying, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I used to be able to manage employee teams, and now I can't even manage a grocery list. And more importantly, how did this happen to me? How did I become the default, or as I call in Fair Play, the she-fault for every single household and childcare task for my family? It was not supposed to be that way. I vowed from seven that it would not happen to me. And on top of that, I'm a Harvard-trained mediator and lawyer. I'm literally trained to use my voice. And so I thought to myself, well, if this is happening to me, it's probably happening to other women. And so I went on a 7-year quest to answer that question. And I like to say, you know, the good news for Fair Play, but the bad news for society is that it's happening to women everywhere, regardless of our socioeconomic status, regardless of our ethnicity. And I have 500 plus interviews with men and women, I mean, women and men, that prove that this wasn't not just a me problem, that this is happening all over.
Yeah. And we are going to get into the meat of this interview. We're going to talk about how we as women pick a certain role and then we end up in a different role in life. That's what I want to get into. But first, I have to share, you said I could, the part of the book where I'm like reading the book in my house going, yes, yes, yes. Like I'm screaming in the house. And this is how I felt. But as we get into the roles we picked, I felt like I wasn't allowed to feel this way because I chose to be a stay-at-home mom. So you talk about how you're going, it's called consider the case of the 30 calls and 46 texts. So you're out with all your friends and you've done a race or something like that. And then it's at the end and you're looking at each other and you're saying, hey, let's go to lunch. And then the first text came through around noon. When are you coming home? And it goes on from there. And then all of a sudden, everybody's phone lights up with all these different texts. And then your husband emails you and says, where's Anna's outfit you picked out? She doesn't have any pants. And you say, well, he says, well, I guess we're not going to the park because you didn't leave me any clothes. And you go on to express how you feel about that. And I was like, yes. I mean, like, I chose to be a mom. I chose to be a stay-at-home mom. I chose to work from home. But it didn't mean that I like could never like go to the bathroom by myself for the rest of my life. Or like,
correct.
Even now, my kids are 18, 19. Well, I'm 47. My husband's older than that. And literally this morning, I'm trying to work and I have fielded so many texts and phone calls. They're all adults technically.
Correct. 30 I'm like, calls
yes!
and 46 texts for 10 women in 30 minutes.
I'm and like, there was a, I'm and working.
Breast Cancer March. Yes. And we were, there are some stay-at-home moms there. There are some working mothers. It doesn't matter.
No.
And even if you've chosen this life, which I will talk about, it doesn't mean that you have to do it all. Nobody should be holding all of the cards. Yes, there are single mothers like my mother who had to hold all the cards, but there are costs to that. There were costs to her mental health.
Yeah.
There were costs to her physical health. There were costs to what happened when things fell through the cracks for my brothers. When you have the solution privilege of having a partner in the home,
yeah,
things can change. And as I like to say, all dogs can learn new tricks, because even my father, who was not involved in my home at all, so he didn't think he had responsibility for any of the cards, the fair play cards is my metaphor for all the tasks. We'll talk about that later. The 100
Yeah, go ahead. Cards. Tell him about the tasks.
Yeah, so fair play at its heart is a card game,
yeah,
which is downloadable with the book. And it's a card game you play with your partner where you each hold task cards. There's 100 of them. And when you hold them with full ownership. And even my father, he has sort of adopted the fair play system with his with my stepmother, and he's almost 80. So he likes to say all dogs can learn new tricks.
But it's hard, like, because so I'm trying to do it without doing the cards, which clearly can you buy the cards yet? Are the
yes.
cards
per- well, no, oh, good. You can download them, or I'll send you a promotional pack. Yes,
but
you can
they
download
need to
them
sell
at
the
Fair
cards.
Play Life. Yes, fairplaylife.com has them. And the reason we did that was because I really didn't want the price point to be any higher than our traditional book.
It's called an add-on, Eve. We could buy them in addition.
Yeah, well, you can download them for free at fairplaylife.com. Exactly.
Well, here's the thing. So I'm like, okay, so the kids are 18 and 19. My husband is fully capable of doing everything I'm capable of. I'm running a corporation over here as well. Like, I'm working, but yes. I work from home. And so nobody thinks I work. It's hysterical. So I'm like, you know, everything car related for the kids, Greg, is you. So Joey's tire.
You can't start there. You can't start
there. Like,
if you skip your value step, if you skip those values conversations, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It doesn't work because it's just another list.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. Lists
You're
alone
right.
don't work. They don't. Systems do, Lisa, which you know because you develop systems for people. Lists alone don't work. And what I mean by that is I did, after that day that you were just referencing, my breast cancer march day, where we're all, you know, marching for courage, strength, and power, and not just a female problem, and we're feeling so empowered. And then we get the, you know, when are you coming home?
Yeah.
And we all decide, you know, maybe we did leave our partners with too much to do. So let's skip lunch to go find the backpacks, you know, the soccer bags, the make our children lunch. That day, I started to ask women, those women I marched with, but other women too, what do you do that's invisible to your partner and your children? And I got women I didn't even know over 9 months. Sending me emails and texts that I was compiling. Things like, you know, don't forget Elf on the Shelf, 1 hour times 20 nights. Don't forget Girl Scout cookies and ordering and sales, you know, 5 hours. Don't forget sunscreen, 2 minutes to apply, but 30 minutes for the chase. And so I started compiling these into an Excel spreadsheet. I don't know if your listeners love Excel as much as I do, but in this giant Excel spreadsheet that had 98 tabs and 20 subtabs that I ultimately titled the I Do spreadsheet. And with all of my training in mediation and communication, one day I send off after 9 months of compiling it with women after women, some women I didn't even know. I send it off to Seth with a subject line, can't wait to discuss, with nothing else. Just the 19 million megabyte spreadsheet. And as you can imagine, Lisa, I awaited his response and it finally came into my inbox. And I talk about this in the book. I didn't even get the courtesy of the three monkey trio. I just got that sad emoji, that sad monkey that's covering its eyes.
Yeah.
And I think that was the day after this 9 month project of writing lists and making lists, because that's what every other book had told me to do. some books had terrible solutions, in some articles had terrible solutions. Even the New York Times solution was the only way to do less in your home is to move to a foreign country where your husband knows the language, but you don't. So he has to fill out school forms. So there were some very unhelpful solutions, but even the most helpful books said make a list. So I made this list, the most epic 9-month project list. I sent it off. It didn't work. Yeah. It didn't work. Right. Because you have to do it as a system.
Right.
Where you're sitting down intentionally together to value everything in your home. Because otherwise what was happening is men were saying to me, well, my wife does all this unnecessary stuff.
Right, right.
And so why am I going to do what she tells me to do? Because it's so unnecessary.
You chose to homeschool our daughter. You chose that. It was your choice. I'm like, exactly. I chose it. Do you not remember the circumstances to which we ended up homeschooling? And now here we are 14 months into it. And every single time where I go, I'm overwhelmed. He goes, well, you chose it.
Exactly. My wife does all this unnecessary stuff.
Yes.
Exactly. So it was very interesting because a lot of other books in this space, which is called, sort of the second shift, emotional labor.
Yes.
The mental load, invisible work. They didn't interview men.
Mm.
And so I interviewed over 250 men for this project.
Interesting.
And here's what I found. So here's the key. The solution is ownership. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean one-off ownership like you own groceries today. It really is this idea of sitting down to value what you care about, to build your deck together in the fair play card metaphor. And then we'll talk a little bit about that step and how important it is. But the real core of this is what happens when you give over ownership. Not saying, oh my God, he's not going to do it, he's going to forget. But let's just talk about if you're living in the system and ownership happens. So what was happening before was, you sort of think about organizational management language, treating your home like their most important organization with some respect and rigor, which none of us do. We're just doing things on the fly, figure it out here. I like to say even my Aunt Marion's Mahjong group has more clearly defined expectations in the home. Because if you don't bring snack twice, according to her, you're kicked out.
You're out.
But our home, no. We just are figuring it out on the fly. But what happens? So what happens is that somebody in your house has to know your second son, Johnny, likes French's yellow mustard with his protein, with his hot dogs and his, hamburgers. Otherwise, he doesn't eat protein. Okay, so that's what I call conception. And then somebody has to notice that mustard's running low and put it on a grocery list along with everything else for the week. That's in the organizational management world, which we call planning. So the first is what we call conception, right? You have to know that your son Johnny likes that mustard. Then the planning stage is the writing it on the list and monitoring it when it's running low. And then someone actually has to get their butt to the store to buy the French's yellow mustard. Now, that's what we call an organizational management language, project management language, the execution phase. Now, that's in my research where men were stepping in.
Yes.
And that's a real problem, Lisa, because they're bringing home spicy Dijon, the type with the gross seeds.
Yeah.
And it's too spicy for your kid. And so what happened was men all over this country, when I interviewed them, when I actually stopped to interview men, they said to me, I can't get anything right. Even when I go to the store for mustard, I'm bringing home the wrong type. So I'm not going to, why should I go to the store? And then women all over this country were saying to me, Eve, I'm looking at your estate planning card. You want me to trust my husband with my living will? The dude can't even bring home the right type of mustard. And so as a mediator, what I like to say, mediators often say, the presenting problem is not the real problem. So this is not about the blueberries I told you about. This is not about French's yellow mustard. This is about trust.
Mm.
And how do you enter a system where you trust your partner and they value your time enough so that they're going to own the full mustard situation from conception to planning to execution? That's when things change.
Yeah, and I think let's get into the different types of women that you outline in the book, because I feel like I picked one kind of woman when we were dating and got married, and now I would like to pick a different kind of woman, please. But I've been doing this woman for 30 years with my husband, and he would like me to not pick a different kind of woman, please. So
correct. Well, that's it. We know we get to change. We don't have to be the something forever. But I will say, we'll talk about, let's talk about the four personality profiles.
Yes.
But before we do that, I want to just say one thing. I want to say one thing, which is why there's four personality profiles for women and for men as well, is because 50-50 is the wrong equation.
100-100.
I want to just tell your listeners that.
Yeah.
This idea of 50-50 in the home is the wrong equation, because I don't know what your situation is, Lisa. You don't know what mine is. But this unrealistic expectation that everything in the home is going to be split 50-50, A, leads women up, I believe, for a lifetime of disappointment and resentment. But also, it's just, it's unrealistic, because it's really never 50-50. And that doesn't matter, because that's about scorekeeping. And like I said, what it really is, the secret solution that your listeners are hearing, is it's about ownership. It's about owning the full mustard situation. And that can literally be, one card can be transformative. So we'll get into why that's important. But why I need to set that up is because regardless of your personality profile, will dictate what your perception of fairness is.
True.
And so what I found in the scholarship and the research, because Fair Play does have an 8-page bibliography, which is just the abridged version, because I read all the articles for you on the gender division of labor. And I'll say you don't have to read them, because I read them for you. But what I found was the perception of fairness is more important in a relationship than actual fairness. And so you need to know who you are so that you can understand how you perceive fairness. And so the number one personality profile is what I call the intentional traditionalist. That's somebody who has chosen to hold all the cards, or most of the Fair Play cards, to stay at home. But like I say, no one should have to hold all of the cards. But your perception—
And that would be me.
Yes.
Like Greg takes out the trash. He cuts the grass. He used to take care of all the cars, but now I have him just take care of his. I want to take care of my own. I am an intentional traditionalist.
Okay,
I
have always worked. That's a three of 100 cards.
Yes,
and I feel
right.
say for my intentional traditionalist, you know, you can expect at least 10 or 15 cards off your plate.
Yeah. Because he held the money and the insurance card. I mean, and that was a huge card. So I was like, I'll hold all the other cards. I mean, until like 2 years ago, everything I earned was for private school and vacations. Like it was
I understand
not
that,
consequence.
But that time is money, right? Is why a lot of women are picking up every single other thing in the home, because they believe that time is money.
Yep.
And by the way, that's why 50-50 is the wrong equation, because work is important and it does take time, especially if there is a primary breadwinner. However, that primary breadwinner is also getting rewarded for that, their work, their cards, through pay, through money.
Yeah.
Through accolades, through investments, potentially professional development, through investments in speaking to other adults during their day.
Other adults, that's definitely a thing.
Well, I had someone who said to me, you know, when I was on the book tour, they said, who's a fellow author, a man who was on the book tour with me, he said, speaking to 3,000 people every day is way easier than a Sunday with my children alone.
Yeah.
And that's really the truth. The watching card of the Fair Play system, the watching card, that's a hard card. And I think it's probably the hardest. Watching toddlers or watching kids is hard.
And I loved holding all those cards. I did. I loved being an intentional traditionalist. I would say I still am an intended traditionalist, in that I want our home to be loving and nurturing, and the holidays to be memorable and fantastic and everything to run well. So that is the intentional traditionalist. Okay, so we have the intended traditionalist.
Yeah, that's one.
Can you do the new superwoman next?
Yes.
Because I think that's the other one that people pick.
It is a very common profile.
Okay.
It is a woman who's holding more than 60 of the Fair Play cards. The conception and planning, the mental load, the knowing, the monitoring, the mustard parts. More than 60 cards, and they work either part-time or full-time outside the home. Mm-hmm. Mostly full-time. The new superwomen are women who are working full-time and holding most of the cards. And those women have different issues, than the intentional traditionalists. Intentional traditionalists, I saw more of a identity loss issues. Mm-hmm. The lack, guilt and shame around taking time for themselves, for unpaid pursuits that weren't money-making, which are very important to our longevity and to
partnerships. So true. Everything I've done, like, well, I have to take the time because I'm earning money.
Correct.
Totally. Correct. Yeah.
So that was the intentional traditionals. The super new super women were having mental and physical breakdowns. So they were having, you know, if you're holding more than 60 cards and you're a full-time breadwinner, women were identifying insomnia, Hashimoto's disease. I mean, it was a tough, and you know, there's a rainbow, there's a solution and a fun part at the end. But the reason why we have to talk about these costs is why this can't just be a list or a card game. Because we have to wake up to the fact that we cannot do 2/3 of what it takes to run a home and family, regardless of whether we work outside our home forever, because we have to step into our full power. So new super women. And then the other two, the collaborators where I want everybody to end up.
So let's do the other one first.
But we'll do the last. And the third is the accidental traditionalist.
Yeah. I think this is the one that's probably the most frustrating for women because they didn't choose new superwoman or intended traditionalist. They kind of fell into accidental traditionalist.
Correct. I became an accidental traditionalist because all of a sudden I ended up one day crying over blueberries in the car. And I realized I was holding all the cards for the family, definitely more than 60 cards for the family. And I've been trying to stay in the workforce. And so what that looked like was leaving JP Morgan to be a consultant. And then it looked like setting up my own consultancy and then having 11 clients. And all of a sudden giving over two of my clients to my partner in New York because I couldn't handle it. And then having 9 clients and all of a sudden having 8 clients. And what it looked like to start losing families. And then thank God I ended up building everything back up to a very thriving practice. Because I figured out the Fair Play system in my home over the past 7 years. But it took real intention. And when you're an accidental traditionalist, you have no intention. You're just taking day by day. And then one day you wake up and you're surprised by the life you're living.
And I think
everyone wants to be surprised by the life they're living.
I think the hardest thing I see in the people I know that have ended up being accidental traditionalists is they don't know how they got there. They have no idea how they're going to get out of it. And I could see Fair Play as being the step to leveling it in the home. But the other thing that I see happen is, okay, well, if I could get more Fair Play in the home, they've lost a lot of their confidence in the workplace and they devalue the years that they've spent as a traditionalist at home. Whereas I, as an employer, love that. Like, I never ask where you went to college. I never ask what your GPA is. I don't even ask where you've worked in the past. Like, if you go through my entire interview process, which many of the people who've been hired have called it a hazing process because there are projects and all these things you do. I never once ask where you've worked before. I never once ask where you went to college, what your GPA. I never ask any of those things because I don't value those in my employees. I value problem solving and project management and resourcefulness and timeliness and all of these things that as a traditionalist at home, you have in spades. And I see so many women in their 40s and 50s who are so qualified to be in the workplace, but they feel like they have no place in the workplace because they either opted out or were opted out unintentionally in their 20s or early 30s, and now they have no idea what to do. And so many women who are listening to this podcast who have gone through the 100-day program and All Access, and they finally got their house in order, which not having your house in order is a buffer. Like, well, I can't go back to work because the house isn't organized.
Yeah.
And then you get in the Organized 365 program, which works. And in 1 year, you actually have your whole house or paper, everything organized. And then what happens is you have time. And then you sit there and you go, well, shoot, now what do I want to do? And we don't know. I mean, I get DMs and emails constantly. Lisa, I have this time you talked about that I wanted, that you gave me. What are we going to do with it? And I was like, I don't know. Still figuring it out. I don't know what my hobbies are. I've done like 18 puzzles in the last 3 months. I'm like, okay, there has to be more to life than books or puzzles. I've read 70 books this year. I've done a million puzzles. Even a 5,000 piece puzzle. I'm like, I need a hobby. Clearly built a business. Like, what's next? Like, we are looking at, if we aren't doing all 100 cards in our house and our house isn't perfectly organized, well, once we do that, then what? I think that is the thing.
It's everything.
For middle age, for
it
sure.
It is everything, Lisa. Yeah. It is why I changed the way I wrote this book. Organizational management is my lens. And I can, similar to your system, Fair Play works.
Yep.
And it does get you time back.
Yep.
But I had to address, and that's why a third of this book and the next sequel book, which I'm writing called Unicorn Space, is to answer that existential question. Yeah. What happens when the milestones that culture has set for us, which ends with the first child baby shower? That's when we stop seeing public figures in their milestones. You go through school, you have that beautiful dress, you see brides magazines, you get that baby shower. What happens when there's no more milestones?
Right, right. How the house is done. Yeah.
Create our new milestones so we're not invisible. Yeah. How do we, as a half the population, stay interested in our own lives? And so obviously, if you stop, if you're not interested in your own life, it's easier to get back to it. But I saw what I call the 10-year passion gap. Women who became accidental traditionalists or even intentional traditionalists, who, because they felt they had less of a monetary contribution to their household, felt less of a permission to be interested in their own lives. This one woman, Ellen, she changed the way I wrote this book. I went to her because this is when I thought, maybe if you're wealthier, these issues don't affect you because you can have help, which is not true. There's no correlation between resentment and more help. And I said to Ellen, I said, why did your marriage end? You know, because you have so much help. I didn't, you know, this is early on in my research. And this woman, Ellen, said to me the most provocative thing that changed the way I wrote Fair Play. She said to me, my marriage ended because I lost my permission to be interesting. And that quote was so interesting and provocative that I asked her to unpack it. And what I found out was that Ellen was the first in her family to go to college. She got an art and design degree from a college in the Midwest. She was an interior designer. She met her husband in college. He ended up becoming very wealthy with real estate in the Midwest. And as his business grew, she heard from him, it's not worth it for you to work. Mm-hmm. What is these little commissions doing for us? Better if you hold all the cards, do the school lunches. I don't want to handle the gala. You sit on this board. You wrap the presents, do all the teachers' holiday gifts, volunteer in the school. And so she says to me one day, she ended up sitting in her, being in her husband's holiday party, you know, decade into their marriage. And she said she looked up and people were refreshing their drinks and going back to the bar because she had nothing to say. She had nothing to say at that cocktail party. And she said, look, you know, I understand people didn't give it. I was nursing my dying dog back to health. They didn't care that I started the first organic garden in my kid's school. This was in the 90s. And so she got her, tried to reclaim her life. She said that she signed up for a class in Milan. This is before the internet. You could do these things to go back to Milan for 2 weeks. And she had everybody set up, including her mom coming into town and all the lists, and her husband didn't have to do anything. And she said that he didn't want her to go. And that, but the reason she didn't end up going to Milan, which she felt was going to help her reclaim her permission to be interesting, was that her community shamed her. You know, are you crazy? Who leaves, you know, a 9 and 6 year old for 2 weeks to go to Milan when you don't need the money? And so she ended up becoming an interior designer again after she divorced, after she left that marriage, after her husband left that marriage. And she says, get it right the first time. Now, I have lots of people saying that. Get it right the first time. Don't divorce to reclaim back what you thought you missed or you couldn't talk to your spouse or your partner about. You have permission to be interested in your own life. Be interested in your own life. And it doesn't have to be that it makes as much money as your partner.
And
it doesn't have to be paid at all.
Yeah, I don't think it's even really about money either, because Greg and I have been talking a lot on the weekends, I would say for about the last 6 months, the fact that the kids are older, they drive. Now that they drive on their own, like, we have so much time and our house is organized, obviously. And Greg and I both work all week. So, you know, we have, because we're both earning money now, we have more money than we had when the kids were younger, and we have less responsibilities because there just isn't as much to do around here. And we've decided that, you know, some of those cards are totally optional and you could just say, we don't do this thing. Like, this thing, this card is gone. So we've gotten rid of cards.
Yeah,
just take them out. Like, we just don't need them. But Greg and I both are saying, like, we have got to get some hobbies. We have got to get some things going on, because I personally plan to live to be over 100 and I'm only 47. So I'm not even halfway through. I need more stuff to do.
At least So I'm retiring the word hobby because what I found is that that word marginalizes how important with what I call unicorn space is.
Okay.
And I call it unicorn space because I say it's like the mythical equine. It doesn't exist.
Yes.
Unless you reclaim it, like what you're trying to do right now with you and your husband are trying to do.
Yes.
Because we as Americans especially don't value it. But what this is, the real word for it, the scientific word is something called eudaimonic well-being. And why I'm so obsessed with eudaimonic well-being, because the way I want to redefine creativity and the way I do in Fair Play under Unicorn Space is that it's not about just painting or hobby. It is about the active pursuit of what makes you you and how do you share it with the world.
I love that.
So you technically already do have eudaimonic well-being because I actually think your job is your unicorn space in a lot of ways.
Yes, but it doesn't fill all my time. And every time I
have to. It doesn't have
I have more time. I need another unicorn space.
But the book, what, writing a book is your next level of excellence.
Yeah.
And that is going to feel very rewarding.
Yeah.
As you get that out into the world. When you share with the world. And so, yes, and there can be extensions of that. And you can have more than one unicorn space.
Yes.
But it's about finding. And so what I realized the best way to do it, if you don't have it, is not just to grab whatever you see in front of you, but to ask your, what I call your spiritual friends. Who in your life do you identify as a spiritual friend? Doesn't have to be, you could, Lisa, you're now a spiritual friend.
Yay.
Because we have, you know, it doesn't have to be, and actually sometimes it's not the people you've known longest.
Right,
those people are actually hindering your progress. But whoever you think is a spiritual friend, which is someone who wakes, I define it with this clergy person who I heard that term. She defined it as someone who wakes you up from a slumber. Mm-hmm. You ask your spiritual friends, who am I?
Yeah.
Who am I? And I have watched women who've said to me that they're physics, that they're object at rest, object in motion, stay at motion, object at rest, stay at rest.
Yep.
They say that they're object at rest. When they've asked their spiritual friends and they've started to really explore that, they're getting amazing responses because people can see in you, but sometimes you can't see in yourself.
Right. Right.
And then you go out there and you start small. You start small, but understand that the question isn't just, I need to find a hobby. It's what makes you you and how do you share that with the world? Because the active pursuit of what makes you you, so like baking a pie versus eating a pie, that's linked to our, not only our healthier relationships, but it's linked to our longevity. And like you said, you want to live to 100. So we need it. It's existentially important.
So I always say, give me 1 year and I will give you an organized house and organized paper so that you have the time to go out and do what you were uniquely created to do. I say it over and over again.
Amazing.
And now we have these ladies who literally have the time. They're like, okay, I have the time. Lisa, I don't know what I want to be. I don't know. So where would they, Eve, where would they start? Like, how can they start exploring that?
Yes. So number first, so what I say is I have some quizzes in Fair Play about sort of how do you start asking yourself that question. And sometimes it's just a simple prompt. Oftentimes I find it in what people used to do before kids. So, you know, even when they were children, I had a woman who said to me that she, you know, she had learned to play the ukulele when she was in, you know, in one of her public school programs. And so right now I got an awesome DM from her that she was preparing for a ukulele concert in her home just for her friends and family, like super cute, you know, super amazing. I have another woman, and this came from her husband. So I want to just take a little pause here and say how important it is for relationships that women have unicorn space, because I started asking men, this is not to shame women, this is about our self-worth, but I asked men, are they proud of their spouse? Are they proud of their partner? And it was a real red flag if they stopped after, well, she's an amazing mother. So I would say to the men, that's a role. And then I would say, well, tell me more. And they would say, well, I couldn't do it without her. She does everything, you know, for our house. So I said, okay, that's a personal assistant. So far we have a mother and a personal assistant. Tell me more about the woman you married. Mm-hmm. If a man stopped, or a partner, same-sex couples too, if a partner stopped there, it was a red flag to what I heard later in the interview. We need to have that third thing. Yes, as women in America, we probably always will be, you know, firstly identified with being a mother. That's okay. I love being a mother, but there can be more.
And I think it's true even for women who are not mothers, though, too. Like, correct. I hear this from women who are not married and not mothers.
Correct. This is absolutely imperative for women in midlife. when whatever milestones culture gave us is gone? Absolutely for women who are not mothers. But I do notice that when you take 40 more than your deck is the fair play card, you play 60 cards if you don't have kids and 40 more you do, I notice it especially hard with mothers. Mm-hmm. Where, right. You know, a man would stop identifying a woman after her role as a mother and she does everything for the family. So that is, like I said, a mother and a personal assistant. Now, this, I'll give you the opposite side of this dental hygienist husband I talked to. I interviewed them. This dude gets on the phone and I literally had to put him on mute because he spent 20 minutes talking to me about rhubarb. I love sweets. I'm obsessed with sweets. That's part of my unicorn space is finding the best international candy and pies. And I love to go eat them and write about them to my friends. That's one of my side unicorn spaces is my obsession with sweets and pastries and candies. But this guy, I don't bake. And so 20 minutes he's on mute saying, okay, so this is what, you know, my wife's active in her church. There was a pie competition. She decided to go crazy with the hardest combo, strawberry and rhubarb. Oh. Apparently it's really hard to combine because I guess they're very watery. And so you need a thickening agent. I don't know what he was telling me.
I need to go. My mother-in-law makes a great strawberry rhubarb pie, by the way.
Okay, so that's amazing. And I mean, great. But I guess it's really hard. Rhubarb is a hard ingredient to perfect. And there's a lot of reasons why that.
And it's so poisonous.
Right. Okay, that's probably why it's poisonous. But how beautiful that this amazing guy that I got on the phone in the middle of the country, I don't know, spent 20 minutes speaking to me about rhubarb and the pride in his wife's baking. It makes my heart burst.
Yes. Yes.
And I want us all to have that pride in each other as partners. It makes a relationship better to have that pride in each other because it's linked to our self-worth. And so how do you start? You start by some of the quizzes in Fair Play about, or it could be what you used to do, but even if it's not, I want women to understand that there's no finding your passions. You're developing something. Mm. And if you don't like it in 6 months, you dump that. You try.
And it's going to take time. Like it's going to take time. Like
it does.
Organized 365 for the first 4 years was like, nobody knew that it was there. Like it wasn't anything. Like anything that you're going to start and try, it is going to take time. I love, who's the famous Microsoft guy?
Bill Gates?
Yeah, Bill Gates, him. You know, Bill Gates, whatever.
Bill Gates.
His quote that you underestimate what you can do in 10 years and you overestimate what you can do in one. So you don't have to know what it is you're going to be the best at or what you're just try stuff. Like just try stuff. Just take try a painting class. I went on my own field trip. I decided I'm homeschooling myself. I drove by a museum. I've driven by a million times and I went in. I texted Greg. I said, I'm at the museum. That's 2 miles from our house. He's like, well, I'd have gone. I said, I asked you last month. You didn't want to go. So I just took myself. I went. It was great. It was a great 3 hours with myself learning. I loved it.
I think it's, and what I do want to say, which is really important, back to the unicorn space and what we're talking about to your, how important this is to your listeners now that they have your organized 365 and they have the time is, or they will have the time when they're in your program, is that there's three things that what I call the happiness trio. Where women and men were identifying that were making them happiness if they had an extra hour. And that was self-care. So taking a run, walking on the beach with their dog. It was adult friendships, grabbing a beer with my buddy, watching the game with my you know, the NBA playoffs with a buddy. And it was unicorn space. So I don't want people to think that a spinning class is unicorn space. There is something more. The active pursuit of what makes you is super important. And again, I can love eating a pie, but it's never going to feel the same as if I bake a pie. I could love reading a book, which is self-care. It's never going to be the same as if I start writing a book or writing poems. And so it's taking that step to do an active pursuit. Sign up for the marathon, where it becomes more than just running on your treadmill. It becomes a community pursuit where you're actively engaged with sharing with the world. And by sharing, I don't mean social media likes. I mean, purposeful sharing.
In person.
I remember I was watching this awesome documentary on the plane. This woman, Christina Tosi, she started Milk Bar, this delicious, amazing, world-renowned bakery. And she talks about as a child, like the pleasure she got with handing over a baked good to a neighbor. Just starting and understanding that there is that active pursuit, like you said, just sort of sitting down to put a pen to paper about what it can be. What did you used to do? And if, when in doubt, ask your spiritual friends, because that is what ended up with my, one of this wonderful woman I interviewed. She's now a top fundraiser for pancreatic cancer. She entered the New York Marathon. It started when she asked her spiritual friends and they said to her, we know you want to honor your mom in some way. So what if you start with your unicorn space, you know, your active pursuit with honoring your mom? What can you do to honor your mom? And so she said, you know what? I'm going to sign up for a 5K for pancreatic cancer to raise some money. And now she's an ultra marathoner and she's running the New York City Marathon.
Wow.
I mean, how cool is that? I mean, she was never done anything active in her life. And so that inspiration can start anywhere. I'm interviewing one of the American Ninja Warriors soon for the sequel, because she's a mom of three. How did she, you know, get the chance? You know, she, one day she just went into a gym. She started hanging from some rafters, and now she's reading the buzzer in American Ninja Warrior. I mean, that's the cool stuff about just starting.
And I think as we are living longer, and as you know, I mean, if you're listening to this in America, we are a very prosperous country. And earning more money and more physical things is not necessarily the answer.
Yes.
I think we are going to have more time and more space to press into this unicorn space. And so how do we do it? This is not a thing that's fleeting that's going to go away. The more that you do fair play and you hold the cards you hold and divide the cards that are left and actually do Organize 365 and get your home organized and have this time, we are going to get to the point where you have more time. We've been saying forever that you can't have more time, that you can't get time. You can get time. You can get more time. And so now that that lie is being broken, what are we going to do with that time that we have left? So I know, Eve, we are out of time.
The most important question of all.
We are out of time.
You are, yes. But your question, what you just left your listeners with, what are we going to do with that time we have left?
Yeah.
And what I love that you said, it's not about material possessions.
Yeah.
Buying another car. This is the last thing I'll leave you with, is that the men and women I interviewed who identified as working poor and working class were more likely to identify unicorn space than people in the professional classes.
Interesting.
I don't want us to, any of us, to feel like it has to be, our pursuits have to be linked with money. We are more than that.
Yes. Oh my gosh, Eve, I think we're going to be hearing more from you. I know you and I are going to be doing more things together in 2020. I can't wait. You guys can find Fair Play literally everywhere. The book, I was at Walmart the other day, saw it. I was at Barnes & Noble. It's everywhere. Fair Play is everywhere. You can get it on Audible, right? Get it on Audible?
Audible. Listen to it in your car.
Yes. So go ahead and check it out. Eve and I have the same editor, so I know Eve and I will be talking soon. Thank you so much.
Lisa, you're the best. Thank you.